I'm Jamie Seeker, and this is What It Takes. Each episode, I sit down with real business owners to talk about their journey, the wins, the challenges, and everything in between. Let's dive in. All right, listeners, today's episode is packed with brains, boldness, and a whole lot of innovation. I'm sitting down with Tammy Lisi, or as some know her, the Unicorn Chemist. Tammy's journey is anything but ordinary. She started as a chemistry intern at Mallinckrodt Veterinary, then dove deep into neuropsychology research at University of Iowa. And then she did some publishing with peer-reviewed studies on pain science. After that, she left academia, rehabbed a horse property in Iowa, and even served on a nonprofit board before returning to formulation chemistry, and eventually co-founding Formulate Robotics, a cutting-edge contract manufacturer based in rural Ohio. Iowa. You know, those states right in the middle there get confusing sometimes. So it just rolls
everybody
off the
messes
tongue.
That one up. Don't even worry about it.
It's Iowa. And so you heard that right. This trailblazing company is bringing robotics and cloud-based manufacturing to industries like personal care, pharma, even animal health, and all from a lab that she literally helped build from the ground up. And today, Tammy's not only leading in science, she's reshaping how products are developed, customized, and scaled. And she's doing it in a space that, let's be honest, still doesn't see enough women. So we're going to dive into the real behind the scenes of her journey, the pivots, the wins, and yes, the financial realities of building something in this that's this ambitious. So Tammy, I'm so glad to have you on the show. Welcome.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate you having me on this podcast. I think it'll be fun.
Yes, I'm looking forward to it because I'm a little bit of I love science and I love like your story. And I was just so excited to actually sit down and hear about that. So you've had quite a unique journey from veterinary chemistry to robotics. What drew you to chemistry in the first place? This is something that you and I started to talk a little bit about that. I'm like, yes, let's save it for the show. Yeah.
Yeah. So I grew up in rural Wisconsin and thus second person on my mom's side of the family to go to college, and originally thought I would go for animal science, veterinary care kind of thing, because that's what seemed like logical, right? What ended up happening was partway through my college career, I got assigned a lab partner who, from any college student's standpoint, was horrible. But it turned out she was a single mother raising two children and worked for Mallinckrodt Veterinary. And I just made the decision to do all the work and help us both get passing grades. At the end of that, she looked at me and said, hey, do you want a job? And so I got my internship at Mallinckrodt by helping someone. And so that's been my philosophy for quite a long time now, is help other people. And eventually it comes back around.
That's actually really cool. And after your time in neuropsychology research at the University of Iowa, what made you step away from academia and then pursue something totally different?
Yeah, so I ended up in Iowa in academia because my husband decided, you know, he wanted to take a role and he had moved for me in the past. So it was time for me to move for him. And academia is a weird place to be. You're always justifying your, you know, is your research cutting edge enough? Is, you know, what you're doing, you know, going to get the next grant? And I worked there for 11 years. So it was quite a long time. And then it just, you know, grant writing kind of wears on you, always trying to be like in the right space at the right time. It gets old really fast. And I decided that it was time to just take a breath and see if there were other opportunities out there. So that's the like 2 to 3 year gap on my resume, which was just renovating the farm here and thinking about my life and what I wanted to do.
That's really cool. So then tell us how Formulate Robotics came into life. Was there like, we have to build this moment? Like, you know, because you're like you said, it's not like you just stopped. You were continuing to move, but how did you move that far? Like, you know, getting to this place?
It was kind of an interesting pathway. I got headhunted to work for a personal care company. There's not a lot of STEM out here in Iowa. So headhunted to work for a personal care company as their formulation scientist, and realized that company wasn't really like good for me, essentially. Left there and started Unicorn Chemist, which is my consulting firm. From there, I got a call from Usman, who is my founding partner for Formulate. And he had this idea. He's a computer coder and robotics guy. So he's the tech guy. And he wanted me to do the science side. And I thought that sounded like a fabulous project. And it's evolved since 2017. I think we launched the brand in 2020, which was honestly really great for the brand. It quadrupled business every day during the pandemic because people were searching for, you know, how do I stop my scalp itch and things like that. And in last year, we decided to open up and create generation 3 of our robotic system and go into contract manufacturing, because there's a lot of pain points for brands that are trying to build product lines when it comes to contract manufacturing. So that fully launches in 2026.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
So as a woman then working across science, tech, industrial spaces now, what's been like, you'd say like the biggest challenge or something that you had to kind of push through?
So it's always struck me that, I mean, even the very first science team I worked on, I was the only female on a group of 14 men. So you kind of become the little sister, right? And just having people, I guess, look at you and go, well, you can't. I mean, I had an incident at a contract manufacturer where an engineer, you know, was like, well, why don't you call the real chemist? And yeah. And so I've run into that a few times, and I've got some, I get a little angry when that happens. So the nice thing for me at this point is I have enough of a resume that I can say, hey, look, when you can find somebody who's done these things, then they can be the expert. But today I am. And yeah, that changes the atmosphere a lot. So becoming an expert in certain things is pretty critical.
Yeah. And that's something that I think I want to stay on just for a minute, because of the women who have been in business for many years and have had the opportunity to build that experience and build that resume and expertise, it's so much easier, at least for me, to talk about it and to feel the way I feel now about, hey, look, you're free to go elsewhere.
Elsewhere.
I didn't always feel that way, especially in the beginning of my career when I didn't have the experience. I may have had the knowledge and the skill set and was maybe even the right person for the job to be making some of these decisions, to be solving some of these problems, but I didn't quite have, you know, all of that behind me to justify somebody else seeing that as well.
Right.
So how did you continue? I'm interested to see how you navigated the time in between.
It's, you know, so it's really interesting because I second guessed myself just 4 months ago in a really horrible way and ended up costing a client like 4 weeks of testing time. So I still will second guess myself. And I think that's something that all women have to work against, is that constant second guessing, because it's like, do I really know what I think I know on that? But early on, I agree with you, it was really hard. And so it became, you know, more like a tenacity to put your nose down to the grindstone, learn everything you could. If somebody wanted to teach you something, humbly go and sit there, even though you probably knew what they were going to teach you. But there's a lot of that humble moments. And especially since, you know, I started my science career in 1994. So that's, you know, yeah, women were starting to get into the workplace and into the science field, but there weren't a lot of us. You know, when I graduated college, there were only two women who graduated with full chemistry degrees. The rest were all in biology, you know, going into nursing care or that kind of thing. And so it's been a little interesting to navigate that and just stick with it and not, you know, kind of, I know my husband could probably tell stories of me coming home and going, I got excluded from a meeting because I'm a girl. I'm the only girl on the team. And that happened to me more than I care to talk about, especially back in the Mallinckrodt and Baxter days. You know, they would just be like, oh, this is just a meeting for the men. So, yeah, that happened a lot.
I think it's important to talk about because one of the other traits that I see among women who have kind of just put their head down and done what they can do, you know, I think that's really kind of the whole point is that's kind of what we did is we put our head down. We did our job.
Yep.
And we didn't worry about that. And I see these generations coming up now who are just so vocal and loud about it that it's almost off-putting to me. And I have to go back and say, but gosh, like they're not wrong. You know,
they're
what I mean?
Not wrong. I mean, that's exactly.
It's a different approach. It's a different approach, but it's a different approach because we had to be. We've created now an environment to where now women do have a voice. And so sometimes it's kind of, like I said, I personally struggle with it a little bit. I'm very much pro-woman, my whole company, we have all women that work with us. We're anytime we can give a leg up, I'm always very much pro-supporting and, you know, whatever we can do in the community, working with women business owners and things like that, kind of in that behind-the-scenes support way. And that's right. My way, but recognizing that I'm seeing this new generation of women who, you know, hopefully we pave the way for a little bit and changing the space for them.
I hope so. I mean, I've had a few STEM interns and one of them still disappoints me to this day. But,
right?
You know,
it's hard for us, I think.
So hard. And, you know, there's this part that, you know, women want to nurture the next generation and we do. And then there's this other part that is like, come on, you know, help yourself out, pull yourself up because we did, you know, we had to pull ourselves up. So there's a balance, I feel like, between those two things.
Yeah. And that's been a hard lesson, I think, for me to learn. So when I'm hearing you talking about it, I'm like, hey, did you, you know, how do you feel about this? So what's the most surprising thing that you've learned as a female founder in this space?
You know, it's funny because the last couple years, I've been involved in fundraising with venture capital and a lot of fundraising with venture capital. And I'm so used to being that in basically, we used to call it the horse and pony show. Because, you know, all the scientists go to the lab and look like you're busy doing something. We don't care what you're doing, but just look like you're creating some amazing science. And now it's like, hey, Tammy, get in the room and explain why this is all so important. And I'm like kind of blown away that I've gotten to this place where I'm no longer just go over there because people can't understand what you're doing anyway to, yeah, come in here and explain what we're doing and why we're doing it and make them excited about it. Because that's, you know, I'm like, that's your gift. And I'm like, really? It's like, that's,
well, yeah.
Yeah.
Hearing about your background in academia and now like you kind of almost have to be able to teach people to understand what you're doing. I think that's a really big piece because I was just talking to somebody who's in the AI space this week and they were just talking about all of the new developments and things that are going on. And I'm like, why aren't we doing this? And really it's because we don't understand it yet.
No,
you know, it's that education piece of understanding what AI can do for us or whatever the field that you're in. And so that education piece is actually kind of pivotal. So that's kind of cool how your background and experience really led you to this point. So that's cool.
Yeah. And so it's kind of interesting because part of it is my age and just like, well, but, you know, my business partner is younger than me and very enthusiastic about AI because he's such a tech person, right? And he's always like, well, why don't you just run that through AI? And I'm like, sometimes it does give insight. Sometimes it's a little like a lot of half-truths in chemistry because it's pulling data from all over the place. Social media is not the best place probably to pull science data.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Yeah. Well, and AI is learning too. And so I think, you know, we're going to talk about this a generation later going, you know, here's some norms that we didn't have then. Yeah.
Yeah. 10 years, the conversation is going to be completely different about AI. So, yeah.
Absolutely. Well, you talked a little bit about fundraising and, you know, your seed funding and things like that. What are some financial lessons that you've learned maybe the hard way that you'd share with others, maybe starting?
Yeah. So my biggest financial lesson that I learned probably the hardest way was I hired too early before I was ready to really support a salary for somebody. And then that person didn't carry their load the way that they should have. So, you know, I tried all different kinds of ways of managing that. And in the end, they went and sought employment elsewhere, which was for the best for me. But just hiring people, I think, was the biggest stumbling block because I'm not, you know, a lot of people are trained in business. I had nothing, zero training in business. And so I've had to learn that side mostly the hard way, I would say. But definitely hiring too early was the biggest lesson that I learned.
Well, and I would even challenge that because yesterday I literally just spoke to one of our guests who was talking about his planning and strategy. And one of the big strategies is being proactive about hiring and hiring early and the cost and looking at like the cost might be short term, like, you know, you're not getting the return right away. But if you look at the bigger picture, it is much better investment to do it early on because it does cost you if you do it too late as well, not just dollars, but other things. But I think what I'm hearing with you is, yes, you hired too early, but more than hiring too early, it wasn't the right fit.
She wasn't the right fit.
And
So people don't really understand this, but in science, this was really the crux of it, is I hired some, you know, I'm in Iowa, so it's research scientists don't really exist here. I mean, there's a few, don't get me wrong, but the ones that were trained like I was coming up through the pharmaceutical ranks, just they're not as prevalent. And so what I had hired was a quality chemist. That's a completely different mindset from research. You know, research, we're creative. We're always thinking outside the box, like how can we make that work? You know, that puzzle piece isn't quite fitting. How do we make it fit? And she was a quality person. So she was just thinking more in terms of, you know, like I have to make this so that it's more consistent, you know, so that it meets these quality parameters, but she couldn't really solve the problems that were around it. And so there was this constant troubleshooting what she was doing. And I will say, like, she worked for me for 5 years. So it wasn't like, oh, you only had her for, I mean, at a certain point I thought, oh, she's capable, she's doing it. And then I found out the hard way she really wasn't. And we were losing the consulting business was losing quite a few clients as I was building Formulate. So now she's not here. I basically run the way Formulate runs their chemistry team is completely different. What we did was we decided we would work with a bunch of freelancers. So people who run their own laboratories, you know, they tend to be more experienced. They tend to charge a higher rate, that kind of thing. But their clients are still looking for manufacturing. So if you offer them a stipend to help them when, you know, maybe their business is going down or they're trying to take a vacation because, you know, we all have kind of lulls in business, then we get their, you know, their manufacturing work. Versus having a bunch of chemists at a bench trying to do all different things and, you know, working over the top of each other, which is what I'm used to, the environment that I'm used to.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
That's a really good thing to touch on is how who you surround yourself with and who you choose in your business partners or who you choose to work with, whether it's employees, freelancers, however you set up your business, it will affect you financially. Significantly, and you won't always get that return. And sometimes it's a 5-year investment that you figure out, okay,
this isn't
necessarily right.
Yeah, it was way too much time to keep that going for me. the problem was there were some other things that happened personally in those years too that made me kind of turn a blind eye to what was going on. And so balancing that, you know, hey, the work over here, the business over here, and the home life over here, you know, it isn't always that easy.
That's a really good point.
Yeah. You know, it's not that easy. So, yeah.
And then you blink and you realize and you look back and you're talking about it now like, oh yeah, this was 5 years. But when you're in it, you know, you really, it's sometimes not as clear as day, right? It's clear as mud. Right. It's one of my bosses say, clear as mud. But yeah. I think that's a really good point. Tammy, our show's called What It Takes. So, I mean, you've talked about a couple of key lessons here, things that you've learned along the way. So in your words, like, what does it take to be a business owner, to sit in the seat, to do the things that you do, that you're continuing to do?
Right. So I work with a lot of different brands and a lot of different businesses and help them get through all the ickiness of getting started, right? And so what I've boiled it down to is, you know, you have a dream and or you set goals, whichever you want to look at it as. And you have to work every day in a positive, confident, purpose-filled manner to achieve that. And as soon as you can realize that every day that's, you know, put on that brave, positive face and just start working towards your goals, the less overwhelmed, the less anxious you'll be about achieving your goals.
I think that's really great advice, too. And realizing that you get to determine that, right? You get to choose your environment because you're sitting in that seat. So we don't always, you know, you've interned, you've worked with, you know, like you said, you've had different environments where you don't always get to determine the culture. You don't always get to determine, you know, the environment's mindset, you know, how you're going to be every day. But when you are in that seat, you get to choose that. And if you can do that every day.
You chose it and be happy about you know, that decision and just move forward confidently that you made the right decision.
Oh, what a great point. Thank you so much, Tammy, for sharing your wisdom, your insight, your experience with us. Tammy Lisi is a kind of entrepreneur who's not just building products out there. She's building entirely new systems to make the product world smarter, faster, more inclusive, you know, everything that we've been talking about today. I mean, look, you've done neuro research, natural formulations to robotics. I mean, who would have followed that path?
But I will say when I was in high school, no one would, if you would have told me where I'd be now, I would have laughed at you and said, no, I'm going to be a veterinarian.
Well, you're proof that background doesn't have to box you in, right?
Right.
It can be your biggest asset. And I love that. And that was such a great conversation. Honestly, your story reminds me, even in towns like rural Iowa, that I almost said it again. Why is that?
You're okay.
Us city folk, right? But big innovation is actually really happening. It just takes vision, grit, willingness to learn kind of every step of the way. And, you know, I thank you for showing us what it takes, Tammy.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
This podcast is brought to you by Seeker Solution. Are you a business owner feeling overwhelmed? We can help. Head over to seekersolution.com to schedule a call today. Would you or someone you know like to be featured on this podcast? Our applications are now open. Apply today at seekersolution.com and click on the podcast link to get started.